So, welcome to After the Collapse on RadioRegent.com. I'm Louis Moroni, as usual, with Jim Vernon.
Hello.
And today we're actually at the Imperial Bar, 50 Dundas Avenue East, for a discussion. So there's a bit of background noise, but we're all happy with that. And Jim, do you want to introduce our topic? Is that what you're going to do? Go ahead. Well, what am I doing?
You were going to introduce the topic, and I was going to introduce it.
Oh, okay. Sorry, we're here to. What did I say? Okay, fine. We're at the Imperial Pub, 50 Dundas East. Great. Okay, and then we're here with we're doing a bit of a roundtable discussion today with workers from Maggie's, which is an organization run for and by sex workers. And Jim, can you go? Can you now go? Okay.
Okay. So today we have Gene McDonald. Gene is the current executive director of Maggie's, a Toronto Sex Workers Action Project. She has a long history of fighting social justice in Toronto, and is proud to be a part of the struggle for sex workers' rights and the decriminalization of sex work in Canada. Speaking of that. And also we have Madeline North. Madeline is a sex work advocate and board member with Maggie's Sex Worker Action Project in Toronto. She has a background in pro-choice feminist activism and anti-choice advocacy, or anti-violence advocacy, sorry, and is currently completing her master's degree in gender, feminist, and women's studies at York University. And we also have Monica Forrester. Monica is a two-spirit black queer femme who has been working in the sex industry for 25 years. Monica works and advocates to better the lives of all sex workers. And so, Jean, maybe we can start with you to tell us a little bit about Maggie's and how you came to work there.
Okay, sure. Well, thanks for having us on the show first. It's great to be here and great to have an opportunity to talk about Maggie's and the work that we do. Like Louis said, Maggie's is an organization run for and by sex workers. We try to bring sex workers into the sort of arena of discussions around sex work. So what do sex workers need? We believe that sex workers themselves are the best. You know, obviously, it seems like a no-brainer, but very few people actually talk to sex workers about what we need in terms of legal rights, labor rights, social rights, etc. So at Maggie's, we offer a lot of harm reduction services. That's part of our mandate. So we supply safer sex supplies and safer drug use supplies. We run a weekly lounge for sex workers who come in. You can have a meal, hang out. We often have different workshops or fun things to do. Last week, Monica had a woman that does beading come in, and so make jewelry and earrings and necklaces. It's really popular. Sometimes doing nails. So it's like fun things, as well as also sometimes having peers talk about, you know, safer sex practices or safer screening practices for clients, and that kind of thing. We also have just restarted our street outreach program, which is really great. We had to unfortunately stop that for a few months due to funding issues, and we also have a monthly group for sex workers that we call the Real Work Group, and that's again, it's kind of like a support group or a place where sex workers can get together and chat and talk about different issues that affect them. And we recently had an organizational review, and one of my favorite things that I read in the comments from that, one of the people who come out to the Real Work Group, she was talking about how she likes it because it's a space where she can just complain about work. Because when you're a sex worker, often if you complain about your work, people say, well, why are you doing this then? So it's like almost like the only job that you aren't supposed to complain about your work. You're supposed to be happy, the happy hooker all the time. Or you're completely disempowered and exploited victim, you know? And we really like to challenge that dichotomy at Maggie's, keeping space for bad experiences, but also bringing people together to talk about work and to talk about the real issues that we have, and also the awesomeness of the job at some points, you know? Like, it's and you can't also, I guess the other point is that it's such a varied profession, right? Like so many things are considered sex work, from phone sex to street-based sex work to domination to escorting to stripping to massage.
Where do you draw the line? Like, how do you draw a line at the definition of sex work?
Well, because it's the sex industry, so we kind of, it's like a half of...
Yeah, at Maggie's we see the, like, sex work as broadly defined sex work. Yeah,
and also self-defined.
Self-defined.
If you feel what you're doing falls within the purview of sex work, then you're included at Maggie's.
And so many people look at sex work differently, and like they said, define it differently. So everyone identifies it so differently. So to say we're all sex workers or we're all this is so unrealistic. Jean was saying, the real work group is a collective of sex workers, and not just necessarily have to be women, it could be trans people, men, as they sit around and maybe talk about the ins and outs of sex work, how to better their business, how to work safely. And also, it's kind of connecting, like Jean said, because sometimes you can feel isolated within the work that you do. So to have someone to kind of validate some of your experiences or things that are going wrong in your life, or you know what I mean? But it's, to me, I've been doing it for 25 years. And it's a job where I can say when I don't feel like doing it, I don't have to do it. I can screen my clients. I can say yes or no. I don't have people telling me what I have to do. So there's a lot of perks, and it has allowed me to better my life in many different areas. I can live in a very comfortable place. I could go back to college. You know what I mean? So it has empowered me.
So, and maybe Matt, maybe you can tell us a bit about your involvement at Maggie's, and also maybe talk a bit about the funding structure and how Maggie's operates.
Sure. So I haven't been with Maggie's for very long. I've been involved with the organization for about 3 years as a service user, on and off. What I find particularly interesting about Maggie's in terms of being a community service organization and sex work, you know, there are a lot of groups that offer resources to sex workers in this city. Sherburne Health Center, Sistering, for example, is someone you've worked with on this show before. What's particularly unique about Maggie's is, I think it's attention to sex worker culture, and Monica has said this before, and I think that's really important, is it really centers sex work as a viable, complex, interesting, relevant aspect to our lives and to society, I think. It expands past this idea of, you know, sex work as a last resort or sex work as victimizing, but really sees it as, you know, an interesting form of labor that's existed for centuries and people have engaged with in so many diverse ways, and really gives credence to this idea that, it's an important part of the lives that we're living. It's not all of the parts of the lives we are living, but it's, you know, it's important, just as important as someone else's job might be to them in any other aspect of labor. So I really like that about Maggie's. It's a really interesting place to be involved with in that way, and it's given me a lot of support personally and to the communities it's involved in. So I'm new to the board. I just joined the board, about 4 months ago. We've undergone a lot of changes recently in terms of funding, and I think Jean could probably speak to the funding a little more specifically. But from my perspective as a board member, I think, you know, Maggie's at this point is giving some really expanding services to really meet the needs of the communities that we're working with. So in terms of expanding our street-based outreach, doing a lot more to reach out to male sex workers in the city, which is kind of new for Maggie's. So to look at hustlers, for example, who also use these services and want to be able to improve their business, improve their safety, be involved in some form of advocacy, not necessarily through Maggie's, but to be able to advocate for their rights on, you know, a federal level at this point.
Well, maybe we'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue the funding question, but also start talking about some of the laws that exist in Ontario and how that affects what you're doing. So why don't we start Madeline, with your song choice, and maybe you can tell us what it was and what it is and why you've chosen it.
Yeah, I love this song. So this song is called The Morning, and it's by The Weeknd. It's a very sexy song, which is part of the reason I chose it, because I think sex work is sexy, and our lives should be sexier. Sex workers bring sexy things to life. The lyrics of this song are great. I think if you listen carefully, the man who wrote it perhaps has had some engagement with escorts in his life. He talks about a woman who's, you know, working hard for her money. She, you know, she's putting in a good day's work, and she might not be there in the morning, but it was worth it.
Morning to the evening, complaints from the tenants. Got the walls kicking like they 6 months pregnant. Drinking Alizé with our cereal for breakfast. The girls calling cabs at dawn, 6:45. Sky's getting cold, we flying from the north. Rocking with our city like a sold out show. A house full of pros that specialize in the hoeing. Make that money rain as they taking off their clothes. Order plane tickets, Cali is the mission. Visit every month like I'm split life living. Let the world listen if I hate his card slipping. Then my nigga stay tight. Got my back like Pippin, fast life gripping. Yeah, we still tipping. Codeine cups paint a picture so vivid. Fakes try to mimic. Get girls timid, but behind closed doors they get poor. Niggas testing, always fucking twisting. Why these niggas testing? Shit that I got them on. Straight bar, hop into the music of the ambiance. Get shit popping.
Okay, that was The Morning by The Weeknd. You're listening to After the Collapse on RadioRegion.com. We're talking with board members from Maggie's, an organization run for and by sex workers. And so, Gene, before we broke, we're going to talk a bit, before we got into the law, about the funding structures for Maggie's. So you tell us a bit about where your funding comes from and how it's been affected by recent cutbacks.
Okay, sure. Well, we're not all board members. Madeline is a board member. I'm the administrative coordinator now, executive director, sort of. And Monica is a staff member, the community outreach coordinator. Outreach and community support worker. Anyways, we're funded primarily through the Ministry of Health. Through the AIDS Bureau, and so we're funded primarily as a harm reduction agency. Of course, you know, as most small community organizations, we're always kind of working and applying for new things and seeing what can come up, but our main funding body is the Ministry of Health, and we haven't had any cutbacks through that. I mean, we have a very minimal budget comparatively to any other organization. I mean, both Monica and I, we're the only staff, to give you an understanding, and neither of us are full-time. So that probably gives you an understanding of the organization in terms of how tiny it is. But the amazing thing is how much we are able to do with that tiny budget. You know, street outreach, we're expanding our drop-in hours to reach community members who want to come in and, you know, grab some STEM kits or needles or condoms, what have you, right? And we're always open. The way we understand harm reduction is meeting people where they're at, you know, and that's, I feel like, the mandate that we have from the Ministry of Health, from our funder, not to try to, you know, get involved in people's lives if they are drug users. Like, if they want to come to us and ask us for help with addiction, that's one thing. But we're not going to push any of our values on them. We're going to give them the supplies they need without judgment. So we can get a bit into the legal context, and maybe you guys can, Madeline or Monica, can jump in at some point, hopefully. So we're kind of in an interesting space legally in Canada right now. December 20th was the day that the Supreme Court of Canada struck down the three laws around sex work in Canada. Not all the sex work laws, but three main ones that criminalize sex work in Canada. And those are communicating for the purpose of prostitution, body houses, yes, being in a common body house, which I actually, it's so like Victorian. I'm in a common body house. Sounds so fun. I want to go to a body. Yes, and the third is living off the avails. Now, these laws, you know, at first glance might seem, oh, we're living off the avails. Well, that's good. We should criminalize people who live off the avails. Those are pimps and bad people. But what that means for sex workers is that sex workers can't hire drivers. Sex workers can't hire security. Sex workers can't have a live-in boyfriend or girlfriend. I shouldn't say boyfriend, though. Well, I'm boyfriend if the sex worker is male. Whatever. You know what I'm talking about. Anyways, live-in partner. So those people get caught up under the law of living on the avails. The body house legislation, that means that sex workers legally cannot get together and work together, rent a space together and work together for safety reasons or for economic reasons. You know, economically it makes a lot of sense if you're an escort to rent a space and share it with other girls or boys. And then communicating is actually, I think it's like 80%+ of charges have been around communicating, and that disproportionately impacts street-based sex workers. And so by, you know, focusing on street-based sex workers and charging them with communications offenses, you know, that unfairly, you know, targets a most marginalized group of people, right? And the most visible group. And what that means is that street-based sex workers have less time to suss out their clients, right? So if there's a bad date list going around saying, you know, watch out for this license plate, da-da-da-da-da. So if you're worried that police are going to pick you up, and this also applies to laws that criminalize clients, so the client's going to be worried about being picked up, is you have to hop in that car right away. You can't do a little walk around, check the license plate, check out your list, chat with the guy, negotiate your prices, negotiate safer sex practices, condom use, and the services that you're going to offer.
So, maybe Monica, you can talk. Maybe you can tell us a bit about why these laws were struck down.
Well, it was proven fact. Well, I think there's a lot of reasons why. Well, because the woman that actually challenged the laws, the Bedford case, they felt that these laws were restricting them to work safely. to work in a space that was safe. They just felt very restricted, and also they were also fighting for the laws for many sex workers. So, like Jean said, street-based workers that were the most targeted and the most visible, you know. And to see, you know, because sex work's legal, like prostitution is legal. So it's the laws that were in sex work that made it illegal for sex workers to kind of navigate, to, you know, work with clients, to make money without being caught. You know what I mean? And like Jean said, it put a lot of sex workers at risk, right? So you're at risk of, you know, we've seen a higher increase of HIV and AIDS, you know what I mean, among sex workers. We've seen a higher statistics of abuse and deaths among sex workers. We've seen some areas of sex work going underground because of the laws that were, you know, enforced on certain groups. You know what I mean? So I think the government always focuses. Like, I remember one time the government was saying, I think there was a big, while they're trying to push an inquiry around the Aboriginal woman that's been murdered. And Harper's like, well, they know they're doing sex work, so it's kind of their own fault if they're being killed and abused. So, like, we're hearing that from someone, like, our government, saying, you know, they're not saying, so he's saying, to protect us, we have to put these laws on the women. But, like, you know what, if they really wanted to protect us, they would have laws that give us safety, that allow us to call police, that allow us to have to work safely. You know what I mean?
So it was good news that these laws were struck down.
Yeah, it was good news, but
generally
scary,
across
though.
The board.
It's still scary because you don't know the outcome.
Yeah.
Right.
You don't,
so it's a legal limbo.
So now where are we now? Maybe you can Madeline, you can sort of talk about what's next.
Yeah, I mean, sex workers and sex worker advocates are overjoyed that these laws have been struck down in the recent decision. Absolutely. A great success for justice in this country. And now, like Jean said, it's in a state of legal limbo. So the government of Canada had a year from December 20th to implement new laws that didn't conflict with the laws that were struck down. So as Monica said, the three laws that were struck down were seen to compete with a right to safety under the Charter of Rights and Freedom. So those were seen to impede safety more than they, say, competed with, a public decency or something like that, which is really important to keep in mind, right? So any laws that are going to be implemented in the spirit of these laws that were struck down should have in mind the safety for sex workers, to see that to impede the way that sex workers can communicate with their clients is problematic for their safety, to impede the way that sex workers can work communally, as per the Body House legislation, would impede their right to safety under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Anything that would compete with anyone's right to live off via veils, be it family, security, drivers, would be problematic under that same idea. So right now, I think we're all apprehensive to see what the government will implement. There's been some conversations that we've seen happen from Peter McKay and Stephen Harper, a lot of people leaning towards the Nordic approach, coming from a right-wing perspective.
Maybe you can describe what that would look like.
Sure. So what's been discussed by a lot of conservative feminist advocates, a lot of anti-sex work advocates, and a lot of religious perspectives has been the Nordic approach. So this is an approach that was policy that was put into place in 1999 in Sweden specifically, which instead of criminalizing sex workers themselves, so that would be if you're caught communicating for the purposes of prostitution as a sex worker, you would not be criminalized, however your client would be. So it puts the onus of criminalization onto the client, and this kind of policy is done with the underlying assumption that sex worker, the underlying misinformation, I would say, that sex work is inherently violence against women, and that's where the Swedish approach is coming from. At Maggie's, we strongly oppose the Nordic model across the board, as do a lot of advocates of sex workers. Most sex workers in Sweden, feminist advocates, healthcare advocates, strongly oppose this model for a number of reasons. So first of all, similar to what we've been talking about around criminalization of sex workers themselves, we see that criminalization of clients puts sex workers in the exact same situation that puts their safety at risk. It impinges the way that they can implement their own safety protocols. So in Canada, just as laws against communication have been struck down, if you limit the way that clients can communicate and are going to be criminalized, you're going to see the same movement to the dark alley that's putting women at risk. It means that they can negotiate their own terms because they fear that their clients are going to be picked up. And which is interesting to think about that. Also, the Nordic model is asking sex workers to testify against their own clients in a court of law, and we've seen very few instances of any clients ever being successfully convicted of any crimes, because in reality, sex workers want to be seeing their clients. They want to be seeing their good clients, people who are respectful of them. I think if this was, inherently a violent activity, you would see a lot more convictions. And in reality, that's just not the case. Sex workers are in it with their clients. They respect their clients respect them. So any kind of culture that's going to criminalize clients is also going to put women at risk. You know, secondly, to put at risk, for example, we're seeing this in the States as well, is condoms used as evidence of sex workers to criminalize folks involved in the sex trade, which means a serious reduction in public health and condom use. If you can't carry condoms on the street with you and you're working as a sex worker, it really, really puts you at risk if you're thinking a cop is going to find you and find those condoms. So that's something that a lot of activists are working against right now, as in Sweden as well. Do you have anything to add?
I can jump in. What I'll jump in with is, so we just talked about the Nordic model, also considered called the Swedish approach, because it's only in two of the sort of so-called Nordic countries. But what we at Maggie's advocate for is the decriminalization of sex work, right? And we are joined, as far as I know, unanimously across the globe, which is quite amazing. When you think about it, by organizations that, like Maggie's, are by and for sex workers, unanimously support the decriminalization of sex work. And in terms of a labor movement, honestly, I think the sex workers' rights movement is the most phenomenal labor rights movement that is happening across the globe today. It is awe-inspiring.
Actually, when you were talking at the start, it sounded like Maggie's fills the traditional function of a union, that is to have a hall to talk about work and to work towards policy decisions. Out of that solidarity that builds from being workers together in the same place with the same problems, talking
Absolutely.
About the same issues.
Yeah.
So maybe we should take a break for a song now.
Private Dancer by Tina Turner.
Do you need to say anything else?
I just, I kind of, when I think of that, I just think a lot of my work being behind closed doors, putting on this facade, because we do wear different hats in our work, and we fulfill fantasies, and so I think it's just,
Well, the men come in these places, and the men are all the same. You don't look at their faces, and you don't ask their names. You don't think of them as human. You don't think of them at all. You keep your mind on the money, keeping your eyes on the wall. And your private dancer, a dancer for money, do what you want me to do. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money, and any old music will do. I wanna make $1 million. I wanna live out by the sea, have a husband and some children. I want a family. All the men come in these places, and the men are all the same. You don't look at their faces, and you don't ask their name. I'm your private dancer, a dancer for money. I'll do what you want me to do. I'm your private dancer,
So welcome back to After the Collapse on RadioRegent.com. I'm here with Jim, as usual.
Hello.
What's that, Jim?
Hello.
Okay, there we go. And we're at the Imperial Pub at 50 Dundas Street East in Toronto. We're here with Monica Forrester, Madeline North, and Jean McDonald from Maggie's, an organization run for and by sex workers. And we just listened to Private Dancer by Tina Turner. And we were just talking about how the laws against the sex trade, some laws have been struck down. We're now in this environment where we're kind of in a limbo world. And Jean, you were talking about some of the initiatives for advocacy of the sex work trade that currently are being discussed.
Sure. Okay, so like you said, we're in this kind of legal limbo. The Supreme Court of Canada struck down these three major laws that we already discussed. The federal government has a year to bring down new laws, although there has been messaging come out from Peter McKay that we should be expecting a bill coming out in the next few weeks or sometime this spring, if spring ever comes. So what I'm going to talk about is the importance of sex workers being involved in the development of these laws, of this legislation, of policies around sex work. Sex workers themselves, in all of our, sort of various glory, we come, as we said earlier, we come from very different spaces, whether you're a cam girl, whether you're a street-based sex worker, whether you're an escort, whether you're a stripper. We all have a space in determining, or we should have a space in determining how this new legislation comes out. And I also said that decriminalization is the way to go. And I'll give you an example. And we were talking a bit about the labor movement and labor rights. And so the decriminalization is the model that New Zealand has, right? So what we are looking for, as well as other organizations across Canada, is a made in Canada, New Zealand type model of decriminalization. In New Zealand, just about a month ago, a woman who was working at an in-call agency, also kind of called a brothel in the sort of more sexy terms, or body house. It actually put a labor rights legal challenge against her boss for sexual harassment. Sexual harassment in the workplace. My boss should not be grabbing my ass. My boss should not be making lewd comments to me. And because she lives in New Zealand where sex work is decriminalized, she was able to take that complaint to the Labor Rights Tribunal and she won. Right? She won. And I feel that only if we have a model of decriminalization in Canada can sex workers access that kind of rights, those kind of labor laws. And that is imperative as far as I'm concerned. Now, we can also talk about the public health impact of decriminalization, access to, you know, the things that Maggie supplies, you know, the condom use, those kind of things. And sorry, I'm getting a bit off track. So in right now, we also have, through Stella, which is an organization like Maggie's based in Montreal, they are coordinating a national working group of sex workers and sex worker organizations to lobby the government to push for decriminalization. And that group is called the Canadian Alliance for Sex Work Law Reform. And Maggie's is definitely a part of this. And we are, you know, pushing for decriminalization because we do believe that sex workers need these labor rights. We deserve human rights. We deserve to be respected. We deserve to have our work recognized as valuable work.
Is that, Monica, how you envision
what my vision is? Well, the fear, okay.
Oh, that's right. Oh, you can hold it.
The fear. Well, it's just, the Nordic law would, like we were saying, would target the Johns, would push sex work underground again. You know what I mean? Put all sex workers at risk. Put Johns at risk. You know, and it's proven fact, we've seen women being murdered because John's being charged, being outed in their families or their communities. And who do they target? They target the sex workers, right? Because we're the villains, right? So I think the Nordic law would definitely put us all at risk in different levels of our lives. And through gender, race, and class, I think that plays a big role in how sex workers are treated. Right, so a woman of color or a sex worker of color might deal with more harsher consequences through the laws, whereas someone that might be white and privileged might not maybe oversee some of those things, right? So, and we really, because, you know, the most effective would be the street-based workers, right? And statistically shown that they are the most targeted, you know what I mean, the most harassed. You know, the most jails. And within that population, we see a more higher population of people of color coming from different communities, cultures.
And Aboriginal.
People. Yeah, definitely Aboriginal people are the most targeted. And once again, the fear that, you know, and also look at migrant workers. There's a lot of workers that come here from different countries. Even we're seeing now here within Toronto, a lot of sex workers moving around to make money. It's like globalization, like, you know what I mean? You're seeing a lot more. So I think, you know, and I think, didn't they pass that law around, there was that talks around, you know, migrant workers coming here, they can't do sex work. If they found out they do sex work, they're being sent back.
They're being deported, yeah.
Right, so.
Adult entertainers.
Yes, exactly.
Like, through,
yeah.
Exotic dancers used to be able to get migrant, like, labor visas.
Mm-hmm.
Like, basically, work visas
yeah.
to do exotic dancing.
Yeah.
And that has been cut that?
Well, because I think women are being trafficked into Canada or other countries. But there are a lot of sex workers that actually know that they're coming to these countries to do this work, to send money back home. And you see that in a lot of migrant workers here that are working in factory jobs or nannies that are, you know, that are, yeah, you know what I mean, that are doing the same kind of work and dealing with the same kind of abuse, right? So,
there's not the same kind of moral hysteria.
No, it's actually, yeah, exactly.
The farm workers from Mexico who are being exploited
and have no health coverage, or, and that's something that we would like to have, like, as sex workers, we'd like to maybe put money into benefits and have, you know what I mean, old age pensions and, you know what I mean? These are things, these are talks that sex workers are having, you know what I mean, as a collective, right? But I think the laws decriminalized of the New Zealand law really allow sex workers to work in dignity and safety, allows them to have rights, you know what I mean? And, you know, that's something that sex workers haven't had.
Do you think that the decriminalization of the sex trade can still provide an environment that is, like if I'm a John,
okay,
and I have a family, and I don't really want people to know that I've visited a prostitute.
Okay,
I want to remain anonymous.
Okay,
does a decriminalized sex trade environment still allow for that?
Of course. Well, we're allowing that when it's criminalized, so why wouldn't it be allowed if it's decriminalized? You know what I mean?
I'm just wondering, I'm just imagining, like, I come and it's legal and you can create an environment of safety, and then I think from your perspective, I might want to be able to get somebody's ID.
Okay.
As a layer of safety. I don't know if that's something that...
Well, to
some
be honest...
people do, but...
Yeah. Okay. Oh, sorry. I mean, to be honest, a lot of sex workers do function that way already, right? Yeah. We do screen, and everyone has, you know, different safety measures that they feel most comfortable with. So if you want to see, you know, sex worker Jane, who's going to ask for your ID, who's going to ask for your work information, maybe that's, you don't feel comfortable with that. And that's okay, you know, you can go see someone else who maybe won't ask that level of screening. So, I mean, this is already something that is in practice and has been in practice by sex workers for generations.
Yeah.
Like we said, it's a really diverse industry. So, in decriminalization, it really means that, you know, a client who's going to see someone will be more likely to give that kind of information if they so choose, you know. It's not going to be mandatory, as everyone is an independent business owner and they enforce their safety regulations the way they see fit.
Yeah, and let's face it, someone who is providing, say, escort services, part of that business is providing discretion, right? Of course, if we want to maintain clientele, like, what is it in it for an escort to out this client? Nothing. We just want, or sex workers just want to know that the person that they're going to be meeting is going to be safe, you know?
What about on the other side? Is there a portion of the population within the sex trade that want to maintain anonymity as well? In other words, if it's decriminalized, or I need to get a license in order to work in the
sex
trade,
licensing is a whole other issue.
Yeah, that's a different
decriminalization is what Maggie supports, not legalization, which is a huge difference. So decriminalization is where, you know, from how it sounds, it's not a criminalized activity. So that means, you know, the government isn't totally involved in everything. When you legalize something, that generally entails licensing, bylaws,
where you
who can work, who can't work. And the reason why we at Maggie's do not agree with that is because it creates a multiply tiered system of who can access those licenses and who cannot. And we refuse to let anyone be thrown under the bus. We will not say, oh, well, these people are okay, so these people can be licensed and are good sex workers. And these ones who, you know, can't access it, whether it's because you know, of their age or their immigration status, or if they have if they're HIV positive, if they don't have clean space to use. You know, everyone should be decriminalized. When you introduce a system of legalization, that's allowing a certain group of people or groups of people to be continually harassed and criminalized, basically. And they, and those people are pushed underground.
Right. But what about things like, say, WSIB, worker safety, labor laws?
Right.
Those would those still come into play if it's just decriminalized as opposed to legalized?
Yeah, well, that's what we see in New Zealand. New Zealand has a system of decriminalization. They don't have legalization. I mean, still, even under decriminalization, you could see bylaws, municipal bylaws, but we will be working at those levels as well to make sure that all sex workers are going to be treated with respect and dignity and to have access to those labor laws. And you know, it's difficult when you talk about immigration status, because immigration status, you can't access those labor laws, which is, in my opinion, awful. But we will continue to push for, you know, access to those labor laws, even for migrant workers.
And also decriminalize would allow, I think it will change society's ideas of sex work.
Yes,
stigma, like it won't erase it completely. I think we're all conformed to think a certain way, and culture, religion play a big role in that. But it'll allow to give us rights, and if we have these rights, people will think twice to sexually assault or harass or kill sex workers. Right? Because they think, okay, now they're valid workers. You know what I mean? And it will just change the tone of it. Right? Hopefully a lot. But,
yeah.
But it will change the tone and how sex workers are looked at. And
yeah.
I think because of these laws, it really puts us in a place where people think they can actually vilify us and treat us like criminals. You know? And
we're
I
also
think...
only villains or victims.
Exactly. And also, it is statistically shown in the game that assaults and rapes and deaths, like murder, have went down with the New Deal. It's empowered sex workers to push to have safe use, you know what I mean? Push for safety within the work they do, within the spaces they have or create. To have better liaisons with police enforcement, with the courts, you know what I mean? So these are things that I think as citizens we all deserve and we all should have, right? So that's what we're pushing for. Like she said, legalizing still allows the government to dictate how we work, where we work, who can work.
Yes.
Right, and I think that's unfair. You know what I mean?
So then, Madeline, maybe you can talk about how you, and it's interesting because there's this deadline on the government to actually respond to this vacuum. I assume that they're going to actually try to replace the old laws with some new ones, but maybe you can sort of give your perspective of the best case scenario.
Yeah, well, we kind of, at this point, don't know exactly what to expect. A lot of us thought that there was going to be some inclusion of laws around sex work in the omnibus Victims of Crime Bill, and there wasn't, and Peter McKay has been talking about it, Stephen Harper has been talking about it. So we don't exactly know what's happening, but, I mean, best case scenario, I think we would like to see it remain decriminalized, which is similar to abortion in Canada. That's something, you know, that's... There have been a lot of backbencher suggestions for legislation that have come up that have tried to criminalize abortion in various ways, and it's remained decriminalized. And the Harper government, you know, has no interest in reopening the issue. On the record, they have no interest in that. And that's what I would like to see as well for sex work in this case. I mean, I think ideally it would be very nice to see our government look at it through an evidence-based policy approach. There is a lot of evidence that suggests that the Nordic model harms sex workers. There's a lot of examples of how the New Zealand model is very beneficial. It allows sex workers like Monica and Jean were saying to access support resources, to enforce safety policies, to work in a group. And along with that, you know, comes some kind of conversations with municipal bylaws as well, which I think is something that we're all very open to and will come along with it. You know, I think we need to really work on divorcing kind of a moralistic, religious approach to this issue, which has informed it for a very long time. The sex work laws that we have in place in the Criminal Code of Canada are a remnant from colonial oppression of Indigenous women in order to control a population of women along the lines of their sexual activities. So I think it's really important too that we look at the history of these laws and where those have come from the government of Canada. You know, so I think
proven that they don't work.
And it's proven that they don't work, exactly. So if we can look at the evidence of, you know, even the impact within Canada itself, our Supreme Court has seen that these laws and any laws restricting the way that sex workers can do their job, particularly around safety, you know, it's a problem. It's a problem for our population. So, I mean, it's a really tricky issue, but decriminalization, I think, has been proven to be beneficial for everyone in the long run, and that's what we would like to see happen at Maggie's.
Okay.
So on that end, maybe we could just get some details on how people who want to learn more about Maggie's
might find it. Jim.
Yeah.
Wait, we got to do one more song.
You forgot my song.
She's got to do her song. I thought we closed with it.
Oh.
Yeah,
well,
that was the.
We can do that too.
All right.
Okay.
So on that note, Gene, we haven't gotten to your song choice yet. So why don't we, before we come back and talk about how people might find more information about Maggie's, tell us about yourself.
Well, my song, it is called "Get Some" by Vicky Lee, and I mean, obviously, I like it because it's a catchy song and it's fun. But I also really liked how she described it in an interview. And she talks about, so in one of the lyrics is, "I'm your prostitute, you're gonna get some." And when she's describing this song in an interview, she was saying how she was reading this novel, The Wind Up Bird Chronicles, who many people have probably heard of. And in that book, it's talking about this woman basically saying, "I have you wrapped around my finger." And so for me, it's very much a song about sex workers' power, right? The power of sex workers, and also about clients too. I think one thing that bothers me is how much clients get demonized within these discourses. And one of the biggest surprises to me when I started working with sex workers is hearing about, you know, clients and how so many of them are just like kind of these, you know, lonely, lovely, sweet people. And I mean, not all of them, obviously. It's and I'm talking specifically about escorting. I'm talking specifically about escorting, I guess. But that's something that's not talked about a lot, and how sex work is very therapeutic for a lot of people, and also how sex workers. No, oh God, it's sex is like 10%. What it was the saying? Sex is 10%, and the rest is 90%. The therapy is 90%, and also, you know, being, you know, offering sex work services to people with disabilities, whatever kind of disability that is. So, anyways, so that was kind of my thing with the song and, you know, about the power of sex workers.
Don't turn away, it's a mind.
Okay, that was Lucky Lee with Get Some. We're back talking with representatives from Maggie's, an organization run for and by sex workers. And so we'll just have time now to ask you for some resources people might turn to for information on all the issues we've been speaking about today, Maggie's in particular.
Okay, well, we do have a website. The website is www.maggiestoronto.ca. On that website, you can find information about us, you can find our contact information, and we also have a significant resource library where you can find a number of links to documents and other websites if you want to read more on topics of sex workers' rights and decriminalization.
And then if there's I guess I imagine that would also give people information on how to get involved with the cause and learn more, and obviously more information on that.
That's right, yeah. And there is...
Yeah, there's a petition you can sign, and there'll be a link to that on the website, I guess. It's called After Bedford, and that's been designed by a number of sex workers in the city who are looking for public support in favor of decriminalization.
Great. So, Monica Forster, Madeline North, Jean McDonald, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And this has been After the Collapse on RadioRegion.com, airing on RadioRegion.com. You can get more information about this topic and other past shows at afterthecollapse.net. I'm Louis Maroney. This is Jim. Oh, sorry.
Hello.
Okay.
That's your signature.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.